What do you think the future of the internet and web development will bring the coming years?
Probably more porn.
Well, even more?
Yeah, I think so. I think porn will be like, on every website there will be like, are you frisky? There will be a pop-up.
This is like already like the case though.
Yeah.
So
hot young studs in your neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Ready for your.
So, you know, it will stay the same according to you.
Mostly, yeah. But there's a few other things, technology-wise. I think the web will bring, maybe, hopefully. We are web developers and we work with the web a lot.
What?
And one thing we had to transition towards is, we are always focusing on making web applications. Like a website is not a website anymore. It's a web app.
Yeah. I haven't made like a regular website in a long time, I guess. Oh, wait. Yeah, I have. Never mind.
I mean, like pure HTML, CSS, and a backend language.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
That doesn't involve like a front-end framework. How long has that been? Like, it's been a while for me too.
Yeah, again, no. That's not that long. I think 2 years ago.
I guess I also worked on one.
I forgot, kind of, but yeah.
Yeah, I think. But that's only one out of like 20 others that are
web. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, where it was like websites every month.
Yeah.
And now it's like web apps only, and just, you know, once in a full moon, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, web apps are nice in a way. They're not websites anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it opens up certain things. It also makes it more like responsive, like your application is more responsive. Everything is interactable.
Can I be honest?
Here it comes.
Yeah, I know. It's just I kind of miss like the old days.
I do miss it too. I think that there should be a clear distinction on one hand.
I miss it a lot. I hate web apps.
But they're probably going to be the future. That's what I'm going towards.
Yeah, I know. That's maybe I should switch careers or something. I don't know.
Like, okay, there's a few things that are happening, right? Like, web is going to take, I think, the main stage in operating systems.
Yeah.
Like, if you install Windows, if you get a laptop, what's the first thing you do?
Install Chrome.
And then? Use Chrome to browse the web.
Thanks.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, what I'm trying to say is we consume our, like, we use a computer to browse the web. That's the main goal nowadays.
Yeah. It's the main reason we use, you know, devices, like web devices, I guess, nowadays.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess there are some native applications still, but a lot of communication applications, like social media is probably...
Sure.
Like, is there a social media platform that has a native app on desktop?
No.
They're all like web-based.
No. Yeah, they're all web-based.
And what about like communication? Like
I think like Facebook and Twitter were like the start of this whole shift into the more web-based application space.
Yeah, I think so.
Because they are web applications, both.
Yeah.
So
they didn't offer a native application either.
Yeah, exactly.
From the get-go. Like, they started a while ago, 2009.
Yeah.
Or
something like that.
Yeah. And there was no concept of web app back then.
Yeah.
Not really. Like, they would be called websites with...
Yeah, just websites, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
And the thing is that if you wanted to use their service, their website, their platform, you had to be on a browser.
Yeah.
You had to be logged in a browser. But eventually they were like, how do we get this on your desktop?
Yeah.
Like, how do you give you the experience of double clicking an icon on your desktop? And I feel like that's also like maybe iOS and Android, you know, the add to home screen. That is maybe like where it stems from, where people are like, I want to visit this website as if it's a native app because I don't want to go to a different app. Like, I want to keep this somewhere. Like, I want to be able to switch to it quickly on my phone.
Yeah, it's also to kind of declutter, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Because like a browser can do a bunch of things mm-hmm. while you maybe True. Only want, you know, one functionality and yeah. that's use that web app.
And like on your phone, what do you use your browser for except for navigating? I guess bookmarks?
Yeah, bookmarks.
But yeah, I guess if you're using the Facebook platform, mm-hmm. you have like your favorites there, your likes, your friends. So you're not actually using your bookmarks to navigate Facebook. Mm-hmm. Have people done that actually? I'm curious. If they've like bookmarked specific pages.
Curious.
On Facebook, like so they can switch between them instead of using the search or like your sidebar.
Well, maybe when they found something they're really interested in, right?
Or they're like content creators.
Yeah, probably.
Or like they keep track of multiple content creators that too.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they have 5 different YouTubers who have Facebook, mm-hmm. a Facebook page.
Yeah, but it's like with YouTube, for example, you don't add like a bunch of bookmarks for every YouTuber you like.
True.
You go into YouTube once and just add them there to your like subscribing.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
That's what I'm getting at. It's like there's an interface in the web platform that provides the same or better functionality from like your browser standard bookmarking. Mm-hmm. Because bookmarks is also a form of navigation.
Yeah.
Think about it. It's like you're pinning a specific page. Mm-hmm. And if the application itself offers something that's even better, or like it's also like categorized because your bookmarks, if you start searching through your bookmarks, you search through all your bookmarks.
Yeah. It gets messy.
Yeah. I have like hundreds of bookmarks now with all the tools.
Okay.
I should declutter them one day. Anyway, what I'm trying to get at is, The applications provide enough features themselves that they don't want to have the whole browser wrapper around them, right? As a user, you don't want to have a whole address bar that you're never going to use.
Yeah.
Like the navigation buttons, maybe. But most of those applications, web applications, also have like a back in their interface.
Yeah, but that's probably also, like, I mean, I kind of get it. Like mm-hmm. Browsers can be, have different behavior, for example. Mm-hmm. So if you create that same behavior in your own way, then you're sure that it's always the same, right?
Exactly.
Like there can be multiple, how do you call that? Variables, that's the word.
Yeah.
Variables that might influence people on your application. Mm-hmm. Also, like if you put every functionality in your web app, mm-hmm. People won't leave your web app
True.
To do something else.
Exactly.
So it's also kind of to keep people engaged with your...
Yeah. Well, also... I honestly do think it's like the need to make it a web app or like to pin it at your home screen, you know, like mm-hmm. at the home screen.
Yeah.
I think that stems from users though, not from companies.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like the want to pin something on the home screen.
Well, they were probably like, well, I would like to quickly access mm-hmm. this website,
exactly.
for example.
Yeah. I don't want to navigate somewhere else.
Yeah. Open a browser and then, you know, go through your bookmarks and it's also like multiple clicks to get there.
But like you will never also leave there. Like if you want to leave, you just, you know, you go to the other application, which is your browser or something.
Yeah.
If you want to browse the internet. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think the distinction between what a native application is and what a web application is will be even more blurred.
Yeah.
So right now, for example, when you install Discord mm-hmm. on your phone or on your desktop, it's both, in both cases, it's a web app.
Yeah.
And people on the desktop, I think, still think it's a native application or some form of like, oh, this is like a separate code base.
Yeah.
It could be because there's some like native
hooks
and shit.
Yeah.
But like most of the code and the technology behind it. It's the same.
Yeah, it's the same with like Slack or Teams, for example, or Outlook. Mm-hmm. Teams at least. That is just a web app, and
I
also
think Outlook
Slack
as well.
Yeah,
like I think like
I mean, it didn't
Office 365.
Yeah, exactly. That's all web based, I guess. Yeah.
So they've also switched, like huge software companies or like huge software packages mm-hmm. that used to be like fully native.
Yeah,
have now switched in the like last 3-4 years to web alternatives.
Yeah, probably also because like non-native apps or web apps, I guess, have become more performant than they what they used to. And also, but I think one of the big issues I see with web apps though is the size of the web apps. Like they're pretty big mostly.
That depends. There's now alternatives. So it used to be only Electron that offered like the wrapper and the Chrome engine and stuff. Now you have Tauri. And it's tiny.
Okay.
So they only get like a few megabytes max. And if you're going to use like pretty complex native hooks, so DLL files or some other like hooks to connect to it, you're going to use almost the same ones.
Yeah.
They're similar libraries to the ones that you would use for a native app.
Mm.
So if you have the Chrome engine, the rendering engine, and the V8 JavaScript engine behind it, if you have a small package of that and your code itself, I mean, JavaScript doesn't even need to like recompile to something else. Some of them, we'll talk about that later, but JavaScript is just plain text, so that can get zipped very small.
Yep.
If you zip it, it's going to be like tiny.
Yeah, and if you don't like over-engineer it.
Yeah. So like you won't even, half the time, you won't even need to serve binary.
Mm.
And binary is also tiny, but like JavaScript, it's just plain text, and if it's zipped, it's also going to be small.
Yeah.
So the only thing is assets and the engine behind the application.
It's just like I think I kind of vaguely remember that Teams was like 150 megabytes or something.
Yeah.
Like something insane like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, that's I think how you use it and how many libraries they package with it.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably going to change as well in the future, is how
probably
like evolved the web app to native space the world is there. Mm-hmm. Like there's only a few options now. I think in the next couple of years there will be many more options for tooling for creating native like web apps.
Yeah. Hi, by the way, welcome to Eric with Coffee. I was talking about the future of the internet and web development. I already said that, I think, but...
Yeah, you asked me a question.
Yeah. What was the question? Yeah.
What will the internet...
What will it do? What will it be like in a few years, or 10 years, 5 years? I don't know.
It's more than just the development, right, we're talking about. It's the future of the internet.
The internet. Whoa.
Yeah.
The magic space called the internet.
It's very, very like hacker whiz kid, like 1990s. What do we think of the future?
Yeah, and porn based.
Oh, yeah. Pornhub. That's also a thing. It's like, why doesn't Pornhub offer? Like, why can you? Like, they have sharing buttons on Pornhub.
Yeah. Interesting.
And like
who shares?
Yeah, or like watch this on TV and stuff. Many people have been, pun not intended, fucked by that feature.
Yeah, but I'm like, they are all, we shouldn't talk about this, I guess. Maybe we can talk about it, but I think they are all like basic functionalities that are, you know, almost have become default for these kind of like web applications.
Yeah.
It's like if you just copy YouTube and just put porn on it.
It's more social media.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know.
I don't think
it's also a way, because like you need that social aspect of it, but with porn it's kind of weird. So
it's a danger. I think like within the application itself, sharing with others,
yeah,
fine. But like, why is it to external websites?
Yeah, well, also internally it's kind of weird, but you know,
I mean,
like
if you want to share the same kink and comment on how nice something looks,
it's weird too.
No,
yeah, okay,
it's like a space where that's available, so like people can
a safe space. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same space, the safe space with the same space,
same safe space. Yeah.
Anyway, what about AI? Because I mean, it's the term has been like overused as fuck.
Yeah,
the last couple of years,
and also like chatbots, for example, they are also called AIs. I mean,
some of them are. They're based on AI, like ChatGPT.
Is that AI based? Because they don't even call it AI, I think, themselves.
Who doesn't call it AI themselves? So there's a difference between old school chatbots that that just look at keywords.
Yeah, and try to go down a list. Yeah, sure.
And then you can like create like a tree like a conversation tree.
Okay, so it is an artificial intelligence, I guess.
Yeah, there are AI chatbots for real. And then you feed them your, for example, your documentation or like your whole like self-service help desk.
Yeah, it's just like when I think about AI, I think about something that can, you know, evolve itself. And it kind of does, like ChatGPT, for example, but it uses like, you know, existing data to do so. And it doesn't create necessarily new things. It uses all things in a new way.
I think the newer version of ChatGPT actually does evolve.
Okay.
And like learns from what people are asking. But it's kind of a dangerous thing. You don't want it to be...
too smart.
Yeah, you want it to be influenced by the way that people ask questions and like create a new like branch of a conversation.
Yeah.
And maybe even highlight it to like the company. Hey, people are asking about this.
Yeah.
Like an old school bot would just be like, I don't know. I don't know anything about this topic. But a new version would maybe be like, it would look like over the internet, on the internet, or like check out the forums and like do a search. But I think chatbots, what's the thing with chatbots? Because have you ever used a chatbot that you liked so far?
Yeah. So I wrote down chatbots, but I mean, I'm talking about like ChatGPT, for example.
Okay.
So what I mean with that is like, right now you have those crappy bots, right, on a website.
Sure.
Like, I don't know, does Amazon have one? Or like, you know, one of those bots that just answers a few stupid questions.
Yeah, it's more like...
give stupid answers to a question, I guess.
It's like a service desk, automated service desk.
Yeah, it's like an FAQ in a chat form. That's what it is. But I think those will evolve in a better way to make it more logical. As in, now it's just going through like a list of subjects and answers. And it's like when you... a specific amount of keywords in your message are like, you know, scanned. And then it's like, oh, well, you're probably... you're probably asking this question, so this is the answer for that. And you always get like the most crappy answers ever.
Generic.
Yeah. It's like useless. But I think those will evolve eventually in a better way to, you know, really answer your question instead of just going through a list.
As long as it can.
And also, like, there has to be boundaries, right?
Yeah.
You can't just go to a chatbot on a business site and ask, like, what's the meaning of life, you know, or whatever.
Exactly.
It shouldn't answer that.
Yeah. And I've seen, it's really funny, on Twitch, there are some streamers who have their own AI-driven bot.
Okay.
And it's been fed a lot of information. For example, where their YouTube channel is, what kind of content they create.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is like that the bots, you can tweak them to have a certain personality.
Interesting.
And you can also limit their like conversational topics.
Mm-hmm.
So most...
You can kind of like force it in a specific way or away from a subject, for example.
More like, I think you can like just create a scope of conversational topics.
Mm, okay.
For example, you would say... it's pretty funny. You can make it like sassy or like very business-like or you can make it mean.
Okay.
So like it would answer in a short and kind of like bitchy way.
Yeah. It sounds cool.
It's very useful because like it can reflect the streamer's personality.
Yeah.
Or
I think I read something about like, I don't know, one of those big ones. It's Amaranth or something like that.
She might have one.
Or one of those, I guess, who has like a bot with her personality in it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, to get all the creeps off, I guess.
Yeah. But I think that she definitely, like, I think she has an OnlyFans.
Mm-hmm.
And she advertises that she responds like within the same day or something.
Mm-hmm.
No way that she personally responds.
But to all those messages. Yeah.
I think she definitely uses some kind of bot.
Yeah.
Or maybe a Chinese service.
Yeah.
Like a whole team.
Sure. Yeah.
She makes enough money to do that.
Probably.
But so the personalities for the bots actually are something you can adjust.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you can feed them information.
Yeah.
And the way I interacted with a few, and the way they interact with, like, they talk back to me,
mm-hmm.
is really interesting. Like they almost sound like okay, I wouldn't say human, but they actually know what they're talking about.
That's nice.
And they are like, they have banter. They don't just say, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're like...
That's nice, because what always happens with me when I encounter one of those chatbots on a website, it's like, I don't even try to form a sentence. I just throw in the keywords that I need, and then I get like probably the answer that I'm looking for. Or they always say something like, well, go figure it out yourself. Here's the contact page, you know, to call someone.
Yeah. That's the thing is, it actually says like, you know, it would say, it would have an apology. It would be like,
sorry, I can't find this topic.
Yeah, or like, I haven't been, like, it's self-aware in some certain cases. Like, you can also adjust that, the self-awareness, how aware it is of its own programming and its creator and stuff like that.
It's weird, but interesting.
Yeah, but it's kind of useful because it's like, it will apologize for, on the behalf of a company, for example, in that case, like, we're sorry we missed this, but we will adjust my logic, my data set to include this.
As if it is an entity.
Yeah, like it knows what it serves.
Yeah, that's cool.
What the purpose is of the bot. Which
so
is,
I think they will evolve even further.
Yeah, how?
Well, again, by making it more like conversational and more natural and more like, I don't know, you can ask questions that are not necessarily even, you know, listed somewhere, but they still answer your question. I don't know. Because a lot of times what happens now is that you go to the chatbot. Like, it was always, we go to an FAQ, you can't find the answer, you call or email or whatever, right? And now it's like, instead of the FAQ, it's like a chatbot. So you go to the chatbot and then you go to a call still.
It's another layer of useless.
Yeah, it still doesn't solve the problem of, you know, not finding an answer somewhere.
Yeah, so I agree.
I think they will get better.
I hope so.
I hope so too. And I think it's the same with like development tools and or like editors, for example. It's already happening now with Copilot and stuff like that.
Yeah, I actually have a subscription, but I haven't fully utilized Copilot. I have used it during I don't know, like a test period, and I don't know what to think about Copilot. But yeah, I hope it will evolve.
I think what will eventually happen is that it will like lay out a basic for a website or a web app in a way. So you will just...
It can. Already can do
that.
Yeah,
but I mean, you can, but it's still not like great. As in, you still have to go through it manually to make sure that everything is okay, what it spit out, you know?
Yeah, sure. It had some bugs and variable.
Yeah, exactly. Naming. So I'm kind of like waiting for the moment. I think it will happen, but it will be a lot better, so you can completely trust on it. So it's like I want an React. You know,
you would still be responsible for the
results. Of course, and you'll probably still want to look through it eventually. Yeah. But I think like eventually you will.
Yeah.
You can trust it enough that you're like, well, just build a basic website for me with these languages and these kind of content.
True.
And it will just generate it for you. And still, there's still a lot of work as a developer. I don't think that our work will be, you know,
fully automated?
No, I don't believe that anything about... I don't believe that in any way.
One thing I recognize is that so far when I use any AI-driven tool for development, I want like a second opinion from like a documentation page.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is what it looks like? I'm going to check the documentation. You know, I won't trust what they write.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like a new framework.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, make me a page in, I don't know, like... Solid or so, I don't know what kind of framework, but and then it would spit something out. It's foreign to me, so I don't know if it's good or not. So I'll go and be like, can I get it? Technically, in my mind, I'm like kind of cross fact checking with the documentation page of the framework. And I hope that feeling of I don't fully trust this will go away.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah. I think eventually we will just like, well, it did its thing and it's good enough, at least.
Yeah. I'm kind of scared for that. Anything that's like, because one thing that
it's
always...
It's hard to let go.
No, it's also like it's automatically, you know, like that part is never a good thing about any program.
But maybe like, this is like really far in the future maybe, but like when you join a company, it will like go through your repo or like your code base and it will scan the way you write your code and then you'll say like, hey, build this for me, and then it will use your way of working.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
I mean, I think that's kind of already possible if you give it.
Probably is, but
especially if you give it like ESLint.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe eventually you don't even have to do that. You'll just
patterns.
Yeah, it will just recognize everything. So,
but yeah, I hope some parts of our work will be simpler. Like there's a lot. There were certain situations that I've come across in my lifetime as a developer where I was like, why am I like copy pasting this and adjusting a few things?
Yeah.
And I looked for plugins to like, I don't know, change numbers and like add commas and apostrophes or like convert one type of listed data to another type of listed data.
Yeah.
Because I want like from JavaScript to PHP and the arrays look differently.
Yeah.
But I think those things will definitely be automated in the future.
Yeah, sure.
You just paste it and say, rewrite this to...
I mean, it can already do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm just saying like this is going to be like, if you don't do that, you're just stupid in the future. Now it's like, oh, it's
new. It's nice that it's... Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But you can also do it manually. But
That's what I used to do.
Like, yeah. In the future, probably you'll just do that as a normal way of working.
AI will be integrated into your workflow, so...
will be interesting to see, though. Like, you build something completely, like, in React Native, for example, and you're like, well, I'm not really happy with React Native right now. And you're like, well, AI...
that would be cool.
There's, like, an AI in the corner of the room. And, and you're like, well, AI, please rewrite this in Swift for me.
Ooh.
And it will just,
That's a cool... that's a really cool... you don't have to learn any other languages.
Yeah, you can just stick to one. But that's also tricky,
it's
though.
It's dangerous.
But yeah.
You would have to have like a consultant to just double check it.
Yeah.
An expert. I want to talk about the edge. I don't know how much longer we're going to keep going.
Well, we have like only a few minutes left if we want to keep it short.
Really?
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about the edge?
I don't know.
Because it's going to be on the edge of the...
okay, maybe you should then, because it's on the edge.
Okay, I don't know if the viewers or listeners know about the edge. It sounds really like hyper, like futuristic.
Yeah. It sounds like a cyberpunk Blade Runner thing.
The edge of existence.
Yeah.
But the edge actually stands for the physical location of a server where your application is being served. And when you talk about the edge, it's like your application is distributed across multiple locations physically.
Yeah.
So if you think about the internet and people say the cloud, the cloud could technically be only one server.
Mm-hmm.
It could
then be... Then it's already a cloud, or I guess.
Yeah, because you're not hosting it yourself.
Yeah.
And you trust another company to host it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the services are managed.
Yeah.
That's cloud.
Yeah.
The edge is like the next level of cloud where not only one server is hosted for your application, there are multiple shared servers across the globe that are being used to host multiple websites, multiple applications, maybe even a whole network of servers on a specific location. So, for example, let's take Vercel, which is like a SaaS for hosting your React applications. React-based.
Sure.
Because, Remix also can be hosted there.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, so Vercel is like, we want to deliver your website like as quickly as possible. We want people from Tokyo to be able to access your website as fast as people from, I don't know, the Netherlands.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever tried to open a Japanese website from like Europe?
It takes like 1 second to even connect.
So slow,
To even connect, and then like per request, it's another... And nowadays with like, you know...
It's getting better already, but...
HTTP 2 and Quick, I think it's called as well, from Google.
And also a lot of times, you know, there's a CDN used...
I hope so. But it didn't used to be the case like 10 years ago.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
10, 15 years ago, it used to be like...
just one server somewhere, or maybe even like in your basement. That's...
Yeah,
like,
or a company basement.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I've worked for a few companies that had like their server in their basement.
Exactly.
And a bunch of client websites were on it. So.
Mm-hmm. And the edge is actually like the complete opposite. It's like we're using other people's basements.
Yeah. We're all a shared basement.
And your application will be distributed across the globe to multiple physical locations. And whenever you connect to the website or web app, you will be connected to the closest server network.
Yeah, we'll just pick the closest one.
Yeah. Based on your physical location or like your internet-based IP or something.
Yeah.
And that actually creates the edge. Mm-hmm. So you're serving your application, your service, your whatever on the edge, which means like literally like if the user, like if I think about it visually, it's like the user is trying to connect to the internet and that's the edge of the internet to them because that's like the closest one towards the cloud.
The edge sounds far away, but I'm
far away from you as a content, like as a business.
Mm.
It's far away from you, but it's the edge that's closest to the user.
Yeah,
that's what I think about.
Yeah, I guess
it's like if you are in the cloud and the user is trying to connect to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be like going through the cloud completely to go to the center.
Yeah,
they want to touch the edge of the cloud and already be connected.
Mm.
That's how I think about it visually.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter what it visually is because it's just a term that they thought of. And the term the edge, it's been used a lot. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of a bullshitty term.
It's the same with the clouds, to be honest. Yeah. But, you know,
it's good to know what it means. But I think it will either get like become completely standard.
Mm-hmm.
So like 99% of all websites will be on the edge.
I mean, it's kind of happening already a bit, but
it used to happen a lot. Like people's businesses were like switching over to cloud for a while now.
Yeah, but I mean like for sale specifically is like being used a lot right now.
Yeah, but I don't know, just like 10% of the internet.
It's still a lot though.
Yeah, it is. But like what I'm thinking is either it will get like 90% or it will just stay at 10% or even die a bit.
Yeah.
Depending on, so like the edge is very expensive if you want to host your website on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the cloud, but then even next level, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a big company, it will be pretty expensive. If you have a lot of visitors.
Well, it also makes the most sense for big companies, to be honest.
Doesn't have to be.
No, but I mean, it depends if you're international, I guess. But
yeah.
That's what I mean. Like a lot of people also use Vercel right now for their private projects, which is kind of interesting. But
yeah, but like think about it this way: what if you, as a, I don't know, you're Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you host your stuff on the edge? Why don't you just own like 3 network parks?
Sure. Yeah.
Across the globe, one in the US, one in Europe.
Well, they probably already have that.
One in Asia, and the you will maybe get like 0.2 milliseconds delay or like,
yeah,
but it will still be a lot like less complex to maintain, but also it will be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And some companies are switching back. For example, I thought I think AWS I have to look this up, but there are some big companies who are switching from either cloud or edge hosted services
back to
hardware hosted, self hosted, you know, in your basement hosted solutions. So I think there will be like a breaking point where the edge is going to have so much energy consumption, so complex to maintain, and also it will be expensive.
But that's the thing, right? Yeah. It's like a delicate balance between if it provides enough for you and your users versus the price, and also like the amount of time you have to invest in that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, is it worth it?
Yeah. Look, if you're going to have modern web apps, is the edge really going to help that much? It's like a single time download and the rest will be cached.
Yeah.
And the interactions might be useful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
and also like we optimize right now also in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. So maybe you don't even need that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can talk about this more in depth next time because there's also edge functions and stuff like that, which I think like you can separate like the hosting of your app, which is edge It could be edge-based.
Yeah.
I think you can separate that to like a local
okay.
local place, but host your functions on the edge, but then keep your database back on like in your HQ as well.
Interesting.
I think more of a hybrid approach would be probably the way to go with bigger companies.
Yeah, I mean, that also saves money probably.
Yeah, and also like complexity because you can have like... you know, how do you keep the database synced across multiple locations? If you have if you have like a social media platform,
yeah,
that's pretty complex. Even I mean, Twitter and YouTube, you don't notice it, but they always are delayed.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah,
but
they like have edge hosted servers. They receive the data there, and then they like. Convert it to something that the database actually accepts, sends that to the database. Database confirms it and then sends it back. And it's like, it's always at least a few seconds delay to a few minutes. But yeah, they kind of hide it, which is, you know, if you look at YouTube, you will never see the view count go up immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
That's an example.
It's also like, it's not necessary for it to be instantly, you know, it's fine. I don't know. It's different with like a chat service.
Exactly.
For example. And even then, like if you wait a few milliseconds, that's fine.
I think so. But there are certain use cases where you want it to be almost instant.
Yeah.
But.
I don't know. I think we should like split this up into maybe two parts for next time.
Yeah. Split this up across the edge.
Cutting edge.
Yes, the cutting edge of internet technology.
So we still have a few other subjects in this topic. Yes. That's the word we want to talk about. But we'll keep those for the next episode, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Like think about all the different futures for the web is just too much.
Well, yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah,
and also if you have creative freedom to kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. Think about anything that can happen. It's that's a lot.
Yeah, predicting the web, the future of the web is going to be interesting. Yep. I think, you know, we'll have some good notes.
Sure.
I think today's episode was already a good one where we talk about, like, it's an open conversation.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, did you, like, where we are right now with the web, did you expect that a few, or like 10 or 15 years back?
I actually hoped it would be we would have gotten way farther. I was hoping technology, web technology would be more either advanced more or more natively entangled. So for example, we're still, you know, talking about web apps instead of native apps.
Yeah.
Like why is it still a web app? I mean, why is your operating system making a difference between web and native?
Yeah.
If web is like has to take center stage because everyone is on the web. Why has that not been, you know, changed yet? It's not only the terminology but also the philosophy
behind
operating systems.
Maybe that's a good question. Maybe also to answer next time, I guess, to go deeper into as to what you did expect exactly.
Yeah, I think like I had a dream of like hyper. Yeah, like, I don't know, virtual reality, 3D, more complex animations.
Yeah.
I feel limited on the internet.
Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still feel limited. Like, I want to, like, create performant websites. It's a struggle.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening and watching. And we'll catch you on the next one.
See you guys later.
Bye-bye.